Anyway, you already know this, and they may... I'm not going to give a review and discuss many experiments and everything, all the details with respect to each one. That's been done enough, and what we're really talking about is future dreams. Let me remind you that any time... There was a pointer here. Any time that you can express the background in terms of the mass of the source, you can show very trivially, and it's almost what like what Hans showed, except that he didn't show all of these things, but he had the abundance out here. So you can get a half-life estimate of what your sensitivity is in that way. So you have the mass of the target, the time you run, the background rate per kilogram, per keV, per year, and the energy resolution, the molecular weight, the efficiency, which he pointed out, and the abundance. So these are the important parameters. But we're not interested in placing a bound. What we're really looking for is a discovery. So in order to have a 4 sigma or something, you should have 16 counts if you had no background. But just for the heck of it, supposing that we put 16 counts in the same window in the background, then it's not too difficult to show that you get some number here depending on the signal-to-noise ratio times the same thing. So a figure of merit should have this factor in it. It should have some other factors in it too. For example, I would use a complete figure of merit which would have in it a nuclear factor, which is the matrix element squared times the phase space. I would use it if it would work, but and the rest of this. Now, the technologies available to us, we've heard some, two of them before, is a cryogenic bolometry, which Ettore Fiorini covered, and only one that we know of that's really large, that's Guaricino. The ionization detectors, which include germanium detectors and other things, scintillators, time projection, and tracking chambers. Those are the main ones that have been proposed for large experiments. The common isotopes discussed are these. Of course, there are more, but and how do you get them enriched? Calcium-48, of course, only has a very small natural abundance, but the atomic vapor laser ionization spectroscopy is the only way that is known to get a large quantity. However, the cost of this goes as the final abundance to the initial one, and the initial one is 0.187%, so that's going to be very expensive. This is very tough. Centrifuge in Russia, we have, of course, both Heidelberg, Moscow, and IGEX have already tested that, and the material is extremely clean. Centrifuge for selenium-82, the same for molybdenum, but molybdenum can be a second harmonic avalis process, too. The only place that I know that has this technology is Livermore, Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory in California. They don't have such a program, but they do use it for basic research, so they have the facility. Cadmium-16 can be done both ways. Tellurium-130 can be done by centrifuge in Russia, and you can enrich it, and it's about 1/5 the cost of germanium because of the 33.8% natural abundance. Xenon, of course, is very easy to do since it's a gas, and neodymium can be done only by avalis, as far as I know. And I've already contacted Livermore with that. All right, now the next speaker is going to give me a headache about this. What do you use for these nuclear structure factors? There's a great uncertainty, there's a great argument about which factors to use, whose calculations to use. So I went through the literature, and I took, if author A published something in 1985 and used the same model in 1995, I presume that he knew more in 95 than 85, and I pushed aside his 85 result. And then if there was an author that published something that was way out in left field and at least two competent groups showed that this was incorrect, I threw that out. That was only 3 cases. Then I just added the rest of them from the whole literature, from God knows when, and got an average of these nuclear structure factors which are defined this way and connected directly to the mass and the half-life. Multiply it times 10 to the 13th to get a number on the order of unity, and these are the things that would go out front. So you see that even though germanium, for example, is very small compared to, let's say, molybdenum or particularly neodymium, there are other issues involved in the value of the experiment. For example, as Hans showed, the resolution, the stability, and the background, which is the best background that has been achieved thus far. So it doesn't mean that you throw it away because you have a small nuclear factor. So let's go. Cryogenic detector is the only one, is Cuoricino, and operating Cuore, which we hope to build, and Ettore has already covered this. This is an old, we have had to change the configuration. He showed a new one. This was a cubic one, and this is the result which he showed, which is 7.5, 10 to the 23 years, and the thing has continued to run. And he showed you these also. I show you just the fact that this fellow here really likes his picture taken. He's posing, and he's saying, I am working all afternoon. But the interesting part here is this is one of these thermistors from LBNL. Tiny little thermistor up here, and it's glued to the thing. You can see how the things are mounted. And with that, you get this nice pulse that Ettore showed you, and he's already gone through that. I just remind you. This is the bottom of the dilution refrigerator, the mixing chamber. This is a lead, which is Roman lead, and it protects. This stuff is all very dirty, not like a germanium detector. It's got a lot of complicated things in here that have to be made of materials that are not terribly pure. And then, of course, this protects it, and then you have this nice tower. This tower is like that, big long thing. Incredible that the temperature at one end is the same as at the other end. Then you have ionization detectors. The only one that's not germanium is COBRA, which is cadmium zinc telluride, there's a small device running in the Gran Sasso. The rest of these are germanium proposals. The Genius introduced a new technique in the Genius test facility now, I believe, has shown us that you can put these in the natural crystal, P-type crystals in germanium and operate them under germanium. Majorana starts out with a normal cryostat technology of the Heidelberg, Moscow, and IGEX type, but it could also be used this way. And then the Max Planck Institute at Heidelberg is leading a multi-institute collaboration to take the old crystals from Heidelberg, Moscow, and we'll discuss germanium in general. First, I want to just say that Kai Zuber has this device running, which is rather interesting. Ron Brodzinski and I tried this 20 years ago, and we couldn't get it to work. And the reason was technology wasn't there. Technology apparently is good enough today. They're actually getting data. And, of course, they can do a bunch of isotopes. I think we need to do a few and do them well. But you can always choose. He minimizes the background by putting an array of these. Of course, you get cancellation array of these inside of sodium iodide for cancellation. That can also bring background, but and you have a copper shield and a lead shield, and you go underground. So he can actually do tracking if these things are small enough. And this is an emerging technology. Now, one that's been rather well proven is something like Hans just talked about. And so we wanted to tell the Department of Energy that we were ready to go, but you can always use the Genius technique to start with or later. You can remount these things in different configurations. Now, what's new with this technology is the digital electronics, which is available, of course, commercially. Pulse shape discrimination improvements, although that has been certainly not original with us, and also segmentation. So this is what the Majorana collaboration talks about at the moment. It's a cryostat-based array, and there are about eight of these arrays to give you the 500 kilograms. And the one detector that has been made thus far that's segmented is 6 this way and 2 this way. However, you can segment these things many different ways. And as a matter of fact, at Los Alamos, Steve Elliott has something which is segmented somewhat differently, which is an off-the-shelf item and seems to work quite well. And then we have the business of what are the effects, how effective is it. These are data, and these are pulse-shaped discrimination. These are pulse shapes. This is a single shape, a single site shape, and this is a multi-site shape, and this is typical. As far as the segmentation goes, these are not data. This is a Monte Carlo, and you can see that in the region of zero neutrino double beta decay, cobalt-60, which forms inside of germanium from cosmic ray neutrons, is reduced by about an order of magnitude. We claim that here's where the previous speaker's find is, and also the bounds are in here. And then in 2 years, and this includes construction time and acquisition time of material, you could be well on your way to 10 to the 26 years, 4 years, well on your way. And these two lines represent whether you can get 100 kilograms per year separated or 200 kilograms per year paid for and separated. The MPI proposal is one that we expect will come online fairly soon. I don't know what to call it. It has been called GERDA, but it involves a number of institutes. But it was led by Max Planck Heidelberg. Baird detectors in argon or liquid nitrogen. 20 kilograms approximately. It's the 11.5 of the Heidelberg Moscow, and we will deliver the IGEX detectors, which will give almost 18. Then they want to a phase two. They want 20 kilograms, which they will get new. And in phase one, they either refute the claim of the previous talk by 99.6% or confirm it to 5 sigma. And then phase two, they claim they could want to measure a 10% measurement if Klapto-Klein, Grothaus, Dietz, and Krivosheina are correct, and push the limit to 2/10 to the 26 years if not. Start construction by 2005, begin data acquisition by 2006. This is extremely interesting proposal. I said I was going to keep my own time, Barry, but I've lost track with all of this. Yeah, I was afraid of that. He's accurate, this guy. But anyway, you see that these things are now held and dipped down into the nitrogen with shielding around it. And this is being engineered at the time. This is just a cartoon, but they're engineering things very seriously. In scintillation detectors, I only want to talk really about one. There are some interesting ones. For example, the best bound on calcium 48. This says these D's should be A's. I didn't notice that. The calcium fluoride in liquid scintillator in candles is giving, even though it's a natural calcium, it gives a fairly good bound on the half-life of calcium 48. There are some interesting things like this work that's going on in Ukraine by Zizenko and company, in that it has good resolution. They use a variety of scintillators. You can see that an alpha particle is suppressed in its light output from electrons, and so therefore it's pushed beneath. So the alpha activity that you have would be beneath the endpoint energy where you expect to see that the zero neutrino double beta decay. You can use a number of isotopes that way. They have done cadmium tungstate very well. You can see actually that you can use this as a discriminating. This actually comes from their data where you have alpha and gamma and clear separation. So that's a pretty nice technique. But it would, in order to be really effective, it would be required to have a large quantity of calcium 48. Okay, drift chambers and tracking chambers. The DCBA in Japan with neodymium 150, Moon with molybdenum 100, and NEMO, Super NEMO with selenium, possibly neodymium, and the EXO, Giorgio Gratta's device, which has rather new, exciting technology, which is I call high risk but very high payoff. DCBA, well, it's now plan to use, the only one that's really planned to use neodymium is this DCBA test, which drip chamber beta ray analyzer. Let me show you a picture of it. It's still in cartoon form, but it's really a serious effort. Here's the source, magnetic field, and actually tracking. And so this source could very well be a neodymium oxide, and they intend to go ahead with it first with a natural neodymium, because they haven't any plans that I heard in Japan in February of enrichment. But there are enrichment possibilities. They certainly could obtain it if they could afford it. And then in Osaka, Professor Ujiri and his colleagues with Moon. This has a dual purpose. It can also they've also designed it where it could be for solar neutrino detection. So they have three stages with 1 kilogram of isotopically enriched molybdenum. Of course, that stuff is well known. The NEMO people have it, and we've actually used it for a side experiment. 250 kilograms. It's obtainable, and 750 kilograms, and here's their plan. The challenge here is energy resolution and tracking. They hope to get angular resolution in order to separate 2 neutrino, the irreducible background from the 2 neutrino curve down to the 0 neutrino. So this is what the plan is the molybdenum sheets in between scintillators and fiber readouts. And they are now working on measuring the resolution and tracking. They are actually measuring the resolution and the spatial resolution, which is extremely important for angular distribution tracking. We've heard about NAMO. That is what they showed you. That amazed me, because whether or not it showed up in the previous transparency, we did, of course, the first observation of this was Elliot Hahn and Moe with selenium 82 at Irvine, and that was in the late 80s. And then in 1990, we saw it also, but you're talking about something with jiggled up and down like that. This is beautiful, like something. Now this is your background. First it was the exotic effect, and now it's our background. All right, now SuperNAMO intends to go ahead and make this thing very large. 10 times the capacity of NAMO3 with 100 kilograms of enriched isotopes, and the sensitivity down where you could really test the inverted hierarchy. Unless, of course, what we heard in the previous talk is correct. If that's correct, then, of course, this would be overkill. But you can use, and the one thing missing here is neodymium. And the challenge here is, I see it, and I've talked to some of the people that are interested in forming this collaboration, is the energy resolution. But the way the detector, the NAMO3, is built, it's just got just a block of scintillator. They can certainly do better than that, and they're working on that right now in trying to get the better light output. You can certainly improve on that. Okay, so this is their program. And finally, XO with xenon. I didn't talk about the Japanese xenon experiment. It was covered in an earlier talk rather completely. But this is something going on at Stanford and at SLAC, and it's planned to be 2,000 kilograms of xenon-136. And right now, the interesting new thing here is tagging the barium-136 plus ion, and using the techniques of atomic physics, you have a metastable state here, and you can excite this, and then you can hit it with the other laser and bring it back to about 30% branching ratio. You get 10 to the 7th photon. They've already seen 10 to the 7th photons per second. So if they can locate it, bring it to where you can do this, then you would see the daughter. This was an old idea that I think that Mike Moe introduced at an Erice meeting the first time I heard about it 10 years ago or more. But now they're actually doing this at the SLAC, and they are now building a 200 kilogram prototype in. They're going to put it in the WIP site, and it will not have this. So let me do a couple of quick figures of merit. Of course, there are some assumptions here, because when you read somebody's paper, you know, everybody says we're going to reach this background. But anyway, here's figures of merit on the order of one are very doable. So let's say, let's take the Majorana, for example, and you put some 500 kilograms for a little bit. This is what IGEX got, 4 keV, and was a little worse than the Heidelberg-Moscow 3.5. This is, of course, after you add all the data. And this is about an order of magnitude better than the best data from either of those experiments after pulse-shaped discrimination. So there's a big, long argument in the white paper of how you can get down there. Maybe, you know, you have to believe it or not. And these are the things out in front. This is our, this is, of course, the nuclear factor. This is the enrichment. This is the efficiency we lose from the 100% when you start doing this business of pulse-shaped discrimination and segmentation. You lose when you do selection. You lose some efficiency. You do this, you get about one. And do quarte with natural germanium, natural tellurium, once, and you'll get one. And you do 122 kilograms of tellurium with 85% enrichment. You only need 122 kilograms. You have to be careful that you complete the detector, though, to get that cancellation that Ettore told you about. Well, how about a tracking detector? I just came out of, you know, just decided out of my head that I would do something like SuperNAMO, and I gave them some parameters. And you do selenium, you get almost 0.1. You do neodymium, you get 1.7. Okay, I'm finished. Hold on just a second. So these are the half-lives that one has to reach. I think Yoni Suhonen will tell us about that. And to conclude, you have to look at this very carefully. Let's say we talk about XO for a moment. XO has a small nuclear factor, 0.24, but it has a very large mass that makes up for it. If you can get this background down with the tagging, then this number really, really boosts that up and overcomes this problem with the nuclear factor. And of course, the energy resolution, they're now getting like 2%. That's enough to keep you away from the 2 neutrino. So if you look at any of these experiments, there are a number of them that have significantly good or respectable figures of merit. The problem here is cost. It's not something when you talk to a high energy physicist about the cost of Majorana, for example, he says, "Oh, well, that's not that much." But when you talk to the DOE, they speak a different language. That's it.
Thank you. Questions or comments? There's one back there.
Frank, I have a comment and then a question. You mentioned Avalis predominantly at the beginning. I'd like to point out that back in the early days when Galax was planning the chromium source, I was very involved with the Livermore guys trying to investigate that possibility for enrichment. And a friend of mine actually did a paper study. And he pointed out that if you're using lasers to excite individual nuclei, the specific details of the atomic structure of each isotope is of crucial importance. And so each new isotope is a brand new R&D project for them. And he said, if you want tons of the stuff prepared on an ongoing basis, we can be competitive. I said, we're talking about 20 to 50 kilograms. He said there are other methods that are much more reasonably priced. Something to think about. Now, a question.
Do I get to answer the comment?
Oh, please, okay. I'll keep the mic.
I already interacted with Livermore concerning neodymium. They gave me a price. So I presume that they had that one worked out. They have a whole chart, Dick. And that chart tells you whether it's a first harmonic, a second harmonic, or whether it's kaputnik. Germanium is kaputnik. Tellurium is kaputnik. You can't do it at all. The atomic structure is not there. But there are things, you're quite right, there are things that they would not discuss. But the ones that I talked about, they said, you know, with money to get back on the line and make a real program, we can do this. Yeah, but the ones I mentioned, I think, were in their list.
Okay, then. It's 15 years that they made progress. I just have a question in a sense. Klapdor made a comment that triggered something where he said, you see this line and it's not known, say, in nuclear physics annals. I well remember the claimed discovery of a super heavy element in monazite inclusions. You may remember that work where a gamma ray unknown was seen, and it was later shown that this was an excitation. It was a proton-induced reaction at an accelerator. But the point was, this was a line of the order of maybe 10^-4% that the nuclear physicists had just overlooked. So my question is, if one is looking for something brand new, are we fully convinced that we know all of the lines, even a very low intensity, either in naturally occurring radioactivity or in long-lived cosmogenic activity?
Dick, only a damn fool would say yes to that. Of course we don't know. This is the reason that you have to do more than one isotope. I mean, it's just not possible to know all the nuclear physics at those levels when you're talking about 10^27 years for germanium, 10^25 years for some of these other things. I mean, it's a very, very small signal.
Thank you.
Okay, one more question right down here.
Frank, thanks for the good talk, but I just want to say exoresolution is 1% at this point, at 2.5 MeV at the end point.
You have now 1%?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
That was in the Sage NAPTO.
But you know, the review that I wrote for Mila Baldo-Ceolin, you're the one that reviewed my section on Exol. You didn't correct me.
Okay, thank you one more time.